little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan.
To read about is Bob Frelick. And my voice is coming in remotely as I shelter in place in the midst of the current COVID-19 pandemic. And with me remotely is Thinking Clearly host Julia Minton. Hello, Julia.
Hello, this is Julia Minton coming to you from the interwebs via Skype. Happy to join you here as I also shelter in place.
Well, this is a little odd for us, Julia, because we've been doing this show for several years now, and we're used to seeing each other in the studio and cueing each other and seeing the engineer. So this is going to be a little test of how we're going to be able to do this remote broadcast, but a lot of people are doing the same thing.
Yeah, and hey, at least this time I get some leg room.
Yeah, and I don't have to put up with your eyes rolling when I say stupid things.
All right, well, it sounds like it's going to be a great show, Bob.
I'm really
happy to be here.
We're going to have fun and flow with it. And I always want to thank George Harab for that intro song, Think for Yourself. And that kind of relates a little bit to our topic tonight. But before we get into that, why don't you tell folks how they can get in touch with us and get our previously archived podcast versions of Thinking Clearly?
Absolutely. As I like to say, Bob and I are real people, and we love to hear from you. So we're happy to have you participate in our show, and many of our show topics have come from listeners. We have a Facebook page. Thinking Clearly should get you there. Like our page and comment, ask questions. And we are podcasting. You can find our podcast. You just open up your favorite podcast app and you search for Thinking Clearly. It should show up. Or you can visit our website with the entire back archive of podcasts. That's at thinkingclearly.libsyn.com. That's Libsyn as in LIBSYN, Liberated Syndication. Yeah, so that's how we love to hear from you. Get in touch with us.
Thank you, Julia. And we've got a great guest. He's on the line. So can you frame the topic for us?
Yeah, well, basically, we're going to be talking about communicating the importance of science and critical thinking through music, lyrics, performance, and culture.
Our guest on this edition of Thinking Clearly is Baba Brinkman. He's a Canadian rapper and a playwright now based in New York. He's especially known for recordings and performances that combine hip-hop music with literature, theater, and science. And he's performed around the world in a range of venues, including at technology business conferences, college campuses, science museums, and performing arts center. Bob has also appeared on the Rachel Maddow Show. He shared stages with science luminaries of the caliber of Stephen Hawking and Neil deGrasse Tyson. And then in 2013, he earned the National Center for Science Education's Friend of Darwin Award for his work to popularize evolutionary biology. Baba Brinkman, welcome to Thinking Clearly.
Hey, thank you, Bob. It's great to be on the show.
Well, listen, I want to remind folks before we get into this that we're going to open the phone lines for listeners with questions for our guest, Baba Brinkman. But before we get into the first question, Baba, you're in New York, and the virus seems to be pretty gnarly in that region. How are things going for you and your family there?
Well, my wife is a professor at Mount Sinai School of Medicine.
Wow.
But she's a professor in the psychiatry department, so not front lines with COVID patients, but she did speak to colleagues, and we didn't have any skepticism in our family regarding the magnitude of what was coming. So we've been on lockdown for 20 days now. We took our kids out of school and daycare before they closed and said it's just a precaution. And a few days later, they all closed. And, we've been getting groceries delivered and just, staying home 2.5 weeks into homeschooling the kids and just tracking the news and trying to stay sane. And, we're very lucky because we're out in Long Island, so we have a backyard. I feel for a lot of my artist friends living in Manhattan right now, who are in their small apartments, which is where I was, before, settling down and starting a family. We came out to the suburbs. It felt like a bit of a relegation at the time. Oh, I can't believe I'm leaving the city, but it's this past few weeks has been the first time I've been really happy to be a little bit outside the city. Although I heard just today that Nassau County, where I live, is now has the highest rate of infection, more so than Manhattan. I guess that's kind of like a wave. So, you know, definitely keeping our heads down and wiping down everything that comes by delivery, and just, you know, sending good thoughts and vibes to everybody on the front lines. Definitely a pretty amazing situation with the amount of heroism and just bravery and civic spirit being shown by medical workers right now.
Yeah.
The rest of us just got to hold them down.
It is amazing. I think it's going to change a lot of things in our culture, actually. Well, Julie's got a question for you.
Well, I'm going to say I'm glad that you and your family are staying safe, Baba, and that you can join us on our virtual radio show. I mean, it's still a radio show.
Yeah, we scheduled this before the world turned upside down, so I'm glad we were able to follow through, because virtually everything else on my calendar got canceled over the course of about five days. It was really funny. I was getting like emails saying, sorry, the event is canceled. You know, maybe we should have a phone call. I'd get on the phone and be like, okay, maybe we can talk about rescheduling. And like, while I'm on the phone, another email lands saying, we should talk on the phone. So, you know, it's definitely a tough time for performing artists. Most of my income was from live gigs. And, you know, part of the pivot is figuring out what else to do besides tour around and do live shows. But I'm grateful for our health and safety right now.
Yeah, we're a pretty musical-oriented community here in Northern California, and there are a lot of calls out to support local musicians and all musicians, really, because they're really hurting in terms of performance schedules and things like that. So,
sorry, well, Julia, you had a question.
Speaking of music,
I continued to soliloquize about my my autobiography here, but hit me.
No worries. Speaking about music, the genre of hip hop does not see a lot of science related content. You know, could you tell us about how you wound up producing hip hop, science, and math-related music?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, I think hip-hop as a genre has been, you know, shooting off little branches and buds since its inception in here in New York in the 1970s. And, you know, there's a rapper called KRS-One that was foundational to the genre, and his name stands for Knowledge Reigns Supreme Over Nearly Everyone. In his lyrics, he'd always shout out, like, you must learn. And there's, you know, the classic, you know, drop in science sort of shorthand for dropping knowledge. There's a track called Chemical Calisthenics by Blackalicious, that's like a sort of periodic table rap. You know, so ever since I was a young hip hop head, I sort of picked up on this undercurrent of scientific referentiality in rap. You know, so it was there, but it's not in much mainstream rap, and it's not really like never been in the forefront of it. And I thought, okay, well, what if I take that channel that exists and amplify it and sort of see how far I can take it? What if I was doing like whole songs that were science-based from beginning to end on whole albums that explored grand science topics? And you know, that was sort of experimental. The first time I did anything with it was just over 10 years ago now. And basically it just caught on, and it's like all I've done since my first forays into it. And, you know, I think it was, you know, there was an appetite out there. There's people that like rap. They like to nod their head. They like, you know, stylized wordplay and punchlines and metaphors and to be entertained poetically. And they also are informivores. They want to actually have like real information come through and learn about the world. And they're kind of data nerds at the same time. So, you know, all those sort of closet, double aficionados of science and hip hop, which were already out there, have really gravitated towards the music, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and may I ask a follow up question? When you first started sort of exploring mixing science and hip hop, what was sort of the initial reactions you got from people?
Well, my first experimental hybrid thing was actually literature and rap, because my background is English lit. I'm a humanities guy first, so I did a master's in comparative lit. My thesis was on the Canterbury Tales, and I did a rap adaptation of the Canterbury Tales. And this was in like 2000 and, well, the first version I did was in like 99, 2000, actually. And then the first one I sort of put out and brought to some festivals was 2003, 2004. So you know, people that got a great reaction because it was like, oh, it's such a different way to approach hip hop and bring the classics back to life. But I was also kind of a science nerd. So I put out a record in 2004 where I referenced Australopithecines. And it was on a track where I was talking about the evolution of language and how early hominids in Africa would have had to evolve language from ancestral, like song-like or music-like or like animal call-like forms. And then that evolved into language and then poetry. And you can sort of trace the thread from the origins of language to hip hop culture via the Canterbury Tales and all the world oral storytelling traditions. That's like my master's thesis concept. You know, so people were positive on that, but it was like science was like a kind of B-side of what I was doing, which was mainly about literature. But a biologist heard that record I put out in 2004 and said, I love your reference to Australopithecines in your lyric. Maybe you could do a whole album about Charles Darwin's Origin of Species. And that was his sort of like challenge to me. So that was the first time I did just straight up science rap. And that was in 2009. So 5 years later, I'm doing science rap. And, you know, I wrote it for this prof, like, he's organizing a Darwin event and he wants me to be the entertainment, and it's all evolutionary biologists from all over the UK. And I go at the end of the day after all the lectures. But the reaction was amazing. And, you know, people were just like, keep doing this. They're sharing it. And, you know, there happened to be someone from Science Magazine, in the audience of my first ever performance of the Darwin rap. And he wrote it up for Science Magazine on their online blog. And it was like, he's a cross between Eminem and Richard Dawkins. Everyone should go see this. And, you know, it was received with, great enthusiasm at first. Well, let's say by the scientific community. The hip hop community takes a little bit longer to win over. You know, they're a little more skeptical, like, oh, what is this going to be, like a, you know, dad rap style, like, yo, my name is a chemist and I'm here to say. But I was doing hip hop first before I was doing science communication. And for me, like, making it sound like dope hip hop is job one, you know, and then the message is job two. So people, you know, hip hop heads, when they hear it or see the live performance, they tend to go, oh, damn, this is dope, you know, but they're naturally skeptical because I would be.
I want to encourage listeners too. You can tune into one of his TED Talks. He's done a number of them. It's called A Brief History of Rhyme. So just do a search for Baba Brinkman, BABABRINKMAN, A Brief History of Rhyme. I really love that TED Talk. It was educational, entertaining, and great. So a lot of people might know this, but we like to define our terms here on Thinking Clearly when we're talking about anything. What's the difference between rap and hip hop?
Basically, I mean, hip hop is a culture that came out of African American New York culture and then spread, you know, around the U.S. and around the world. And as a culture, it has various manifestations. So hip hop dance, that's like breakdancing, popping and locking. You know, hip hop art is graffiti art. And hip hop fashion, people are familiar with, and hip hop music is rapping. So rap is the oral manifestation of hip hop culture. Although, you know, once hip hop invented rapping became the most commercially successful product of hip hop culture. So a lot of people heard rap before they heard of hip hop. And so some people that, let's say, like, heard MC Hammer rapping, you know, in the late 80s or early 90s and said, oh, that's rap, you know, they wouldn't necessarily know or care about any connection of where that came from in terms of hip hop culture and its sort of origins in the, you know, the sort of block party scene in the Bronx in New York. But basically, they still have a symbiotic relationship where a lot of rap comes out of hip hop culture. But hip hop culture, you know, you can be hip hop without being a rapper, right? They're sort of like, they're sort of nested. It's a nested hierarchy of categories, I guess.
For listeners who want to hear a little bit more detail about how you actually got into that, they can go to another TED Talk, TED Talk at Asbury Park, called How Did You Get Into That? And that's pretty interesting. You've done such a variety of different topics. What would you say your core messages are in your music?
Well, I think critical thinking and sort of rationalism and just a celebration of science. You know, I've always been I'm not professionally trained as a scientist. I did some undergraduate courses, but I've I've always just read a lot of popular science and tried to keep up. And, you know, I think just celebrating and paying attention to the findings of science and that as a way to understand the human story. You know, because who is not interested in who are we and where do we come from and where are we going? And there's, you know, there's competing worldviews or epistemologies that try to answer those questions. And most of my music sort of starts with the perspective of let's celebrate the scientific approach to understanding who we are and where we come from. And then let's look at the details and see how rich that is as an explanatory framework, mainly evolution. I mean, like, if you want to really boil it down, what's my main message? Evolution is awesome. Evolution explains so much. We should all embrace it. But yeah, that, you know, that's the main thread. Although when it comes to the Canterbury Tales as being part of my, you know, catalog, like that, sometimes I have a hard time explaining to people, like, what's the link between Darwin, Chaucer, and hip hop. And, you know, it's, in a sense, it's kind of almost like whatever I find interesting that's a big idea that I think more people should know about. I use rap as a channel to popularize it.
Now, I'm kind of a nerd, and I found a music video that you had done called Data Science. And for me, that really, really captured the contrast between learning strictly from analyzing patterns in data versus the more traditional academic approach of developing theories and models and then testing them through experiments. It was pretty educational and, in my opinion, really, really important, because that contrast is really going to be highlighted as we make further advances in machine learning and artificial intelligence. Have you done anything on artificial intelligence?
Well, a few years ago, the most recent show I had done was called The Rap Guide to Consciousness, and that was a survey of the main theories of how sort of neurophysiologically we have experiences and thoughts and feelings, and, you know, how those can be understood as computational events in the brain as neurons firing. And one of the best analogs for helping understand that is computer chips. So I went into some of the theories of AI as part of that show, so that we can sort of understand ourselves as computational entities to a certain degree. Like, a lot of our intuitions are just probability assessments happening outside of consciousness. So I have not done a rap guide to AI, but it's definitely in my, it's on deck in terms of things that I'm interested in. Although, you know, recent events have made me pivot somewhat, and now I'm thinking I need to do a rap guide to epidemiology first.
Sure.
And try to help people understand the science behind what's happening right now, which is also totally fascinating from a science perspective, you know, on top of the humanistic side.
Yeah, you kind of came right into my next question, which is, give us your take on why it's important, especially in today's world, to promote science and critical thinking, especially using entertainment.
Oh, I mean, it feels like it's never been starker than in the past few weeks why science matters. You know, like, you get into arguments with your friends and they're like, you know, I like to take vitamins all the time, or, you know, I do this sort of herbal tincture or whatever. They're like, you know, the difference between proven and unproven medicines doesn't matter that much when people are relatively healthy, you know? So a lot of this stuff is spreading in times when it's kind of just a harmless waste of money. And then suddenly the false information starts spreading virally, like, take, you know, 20,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day and you'll protect against COVID. And it's like completely false, and people are getting duped because they just want something to do because they're frustrated and anxious. And, you know, the stakes have never been higher, especially from a public policy perspective. Like, you know, there's the, like, go with your gut style of management, and there's the follow the data style of management. And every day you see it fully on display in the presidential White House briefings, where Trump gets up there and says whatever he feels like is his latest hunch, and then Fauci and the, you know, public health officials walk it back. And you know, that's like a microcosm of what's going on in all of our brains all the time, right? So inculcating people with the habit of thinking scientifically and gut checking, your intuitions against the data. Like in one of my songs, I'm like, let me show you how to be a good Bayesian, change your predictions after taking information in. And it's all about just putting the effort in to have as much as possible an empirically based, data-based worldview, starting with the understanding that your intuitions are going to mislead you and you shouldn't trust them without double checking. And, when times are good, the kind of like hunch based decision-making process is harmless. And right now, literally thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of lives pivot on whether you're making a data-based decision, like following the best models, listening to the epidemiologists in terms of how they weight the various public policy inputs and their predicted outcomes in terms of rate of spread, hospitalization rates, intubation rates, all this stuff. I mean, there's like mathematicians, biological mathematicians, epidemiologists, virologists have been working on this for decades. And like the models are understood, and there's people that, that's their entire career. And the president's up there like, no one could have ever imagined something like this would happen. And it's like, no, you just never bothered to imagine it.
Yeah.
That's, there's never been a clear reason why this is a generally very important habit of mind for people to cultivate. And now more than ever, we need to try to pivot to putting it into action. It's a massive challenge because we're a few years past an election where people elected the biggest hunch follower in history with the least interest in science and data and information of anybody, not just in government, but in like all of public life. And now he's in charge. So I think a lot of pushback is needed right now.
I just want to give you a trophy for rhyming Bayesian. I think that's, I have to give you major, major props for that.
We love Bayesian on this program.
I want to ask one more quick question, which is, do you think, or do you see music and more generally entertainment as having a unique or specific role in this sort of communicating of these concepts?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that I wrestle with a lot because, coming right off a question about how a lot of, our alternative medicine interventions will just be like a harmless waste of money. Maybe music is just a harmless pastime or, diversion from getting on with things. But in a way, ironically, I think music is effective because it can hack those exact same emotions and intuitions that mislead us. You get a feeling, you act on it, you ignore the data. That's like human nature. But if you can give people an experience that makes them feel something while simultaneously telling them about something that they're interested in, lots of research shows that learning that's attached to emotion is retained better than learning that's just, memorize facts or, follow the causal chain of events without an overarching story. So I think, a powerful role of music in the arts is to fit the scientific findings and data into an overarching story that includes us, our lives, how individuals experience the world. That's just that relatability factor that people often just assume science doesn't have. That's the job of a science communicator to show you the relatability. And that's what I try to do.
I want to get back to what you two were talking about before with the importance of critical thinking during this crisis that we're in. And I'm thinking there might be a silver lining, several silver linings in the dark cloud of COVID. And this is just anecdotal, but I'm actually beginning to see some incidents of people challenging what they believe to be false information during this pandemic crisis, whereas friends challenging friends on Facebook, for example, that I haven't seen a lot of before. I don't remember seeing that before, but the phenomenon is pretty new, but I'm hoping there's going to be some good research on the impact of this pandemic on our behavior change regarding the use of critical thinking and careful vetting of information.
Yeah, I would be very uplifted if I saw anything that showed that was a pattern that's happening. I haven't seen that myself, but I also see people challenge each other quite a bit. I haven't noticed an uptick anecdotally, but I do feel like you know, it is in our nature to combatively call out people for being whatever we think is wrong. The hard part is making sure that we've followed the causality chain and confirmed sources and linked it back to sort of the best of our knowledge by the scientific method. That's the sort of missing link, which I hope will now be added to the chain.
And what you're talking about, actually, we can use the word skeptic, and you're on record literally for being a skeptic, believing in reason and evidence. So let's take a listen to your song. It's called Confessions of a Skeptic, and then we'll talk a little bit about that after we hear it.
Great.
I confess it, I'm a skeptic. I believe in the scientific method. I believe in reason and evidence and things being tested. I'm really not trying to be rude when I tell people I don't believe you. I believe you believe it to be true, but I wanna see some peer review. Human beings are oh so deceivable, oh so promiscuous with what's believable. I'm old fashioned, I just wanna see if it's repeatable with a mechanism that's conceivable. Don't dismiss this as if I'm just a hater. If you make the claim, you're the instigator. I just wanna see if that claim could be replicated in the presence of a skeptical investigator. I'm not scoffing, if it's true, that's awesome. And until proven, my thoughts are agnostic, open-minded, seeking truth, hoping to find it. Trying to light a candle instead of groping blindly. I confess it, I'm a skeptic. I believe in the scientific method. I believe in reason and evidence. Things being tested, but I believe in people too. I may not believe in the things you do, but I believe in you. You too can seek the truth. I don't believe in telepathy. I don't believe in chi energy. I don't believe in any kind of energy that Stephen Hawking hasn't been measuring. Physics, it can measure neutrinos. Hundreds of billions are passing through people every single second. That's something we know, but no instrument can detect chi though. We can measure it with a fake needle, acupuncture it with a placebo. And if the effect is no less feeble, that's where medicine stops and psychology goes. Belief, it's oh so powerful. That's why we need to hold it accountable. If you know, then please show me how you know. And if you don't, it's okay to say, I don't know. I confess it, I'm a skeptic. I believe in the scientific method. I believe in reason and evidence. Things being tested, but I believe in people too. I may not believe in the things you do, but I believe in you. You too can see true. Excuse me for rhapsodizing, but fake news and alternative facts are rising. Quack medicine keeps on metastasizing, but there's a miracle cure. Is that surprising? It's called the scientific method. If you think a thing is true, investigate and test it. Never forget that your memory's selective. You have incentives to forget the negative. I was thinking about my friend all day, and then improbably, my friend called me. But every time I thought about him and they didn't call, there was no story, so the memory dissolved. The mind plays tricks, and we can learn to spot them. Evolution even teaches us how we got them. So learn to love facts, and you might just get a passion to put that skepticism into action. I confess it, I'm a skeptic. I believe in the scientific method. I believe in reason and evidence. Things being tested, but I believe in people too. I may not believe in the things you do, but I believe in you. You too can seek the truth.
Yeah, that's great. You know, that hits a lot of what being a skeptic is. When did you write that song, Bubba?
I'm going to say in September of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I believe. Yeah.
What motivated it?
It was actually Michael Shermer from the Skeptic Society.
Oh, yes.
And I went to a book party where he read from his book. I think it was The Moral Arc was which had just come out. And, you know, he... he was like talking to me about my rap, and he had heard some of the songs and shared some of them on Twitter. And he was like, you know, what we need is a rap that explains skepticism. And I was like, hey, I'm your man. So there was an event coming up, which was Michael Shermer debating Deepak Chopra. And also Mike Posner, the musician, and I got to be part of that, and it was like a panel discussion about worldviews and metaphysics, and he was like write the rap and you can perform it. It was at Google's headquarters in downtown New York. So I premiered it there, and then I recorded it, and I think I've got a music video version. If you look up my YouTube channel, and Michael Shermer's in there, like rapping along with the chorus and stuff.
Great. Another song I especially like is Feelings for Reasons. We won't have time to play that one, but can you tell the listeners what that's about and how folks can find your music?
Yeah, sure. So Feelings for Reasons is inspired by a book that came out last year, I believe. It's the book is called Good Reasons for Bad Feelings, and it's by Randy Nessie, who is a clinical psychiatrist, but also one of the founders of a field called evolutionary medicine. And this field is like trying to understand not just how diseases work, but where they come from and why we have vulnerabilities to disease. So, you know, there's some easy ones like COVID is because the virus has evolutionary imperatives to replicate itself, and we have evolutionary imperatives to try to fight it off, but our immune system is not familiar enough with it yet, so it wins until we get a vaccine or herd immunity. That's a way to think about physical infections, right? It's like an evolutionary arms race. But you can also understand emotions in that context. You can think of, for instance, the anxiety that people fear around infection and the sort of disgust at touching something that might be infected as an adaptive emotion that goes back to millions of years of our ancestors dying from infectious diseases. Then you can also think about certain disorders like contamination type OCD as a manifestation of that original instinct having been triggered a little too sensitively. If it's calibrated to go off hyperactively, then you can feel as if you're in a hyper-contaminated environment at all times, even if you're not. But really, you could use that model to understand lots of pretty much all of contemporary like mental health challenges. So, you know, anxiety, depression, anorexia, addiction. Each of those have a kind of evolutionary paradigm that helps us understand how the mind got wired up for a certain adaptive emotion that can then get overstimulated by a mismatched environment or triggered by circumstances in a cascading way, or whatever the model is. It's a way to help clinicians and mental health professionals just sort of better understand what they're dealing with on a day-to-day basis and where it comes from. So I tried to sort of sum up that whole theory in the track Feelings for Reasons, and sort of wrap it around a story of a friend that's going through depression and addiction, and you know, how he uses the evolutionary model to try to come through the other side of it.
Well, I keep finding more and more interesting material that you've produced every time I look, and a lot of it is on your website, so I want to give that. It's Baba Brinkman, and that's, again, it's BABRINKMAN.com. So I think Julia has another question about rap and hip hop, right?
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, what is it about the genre of hip hop that makes it effective in communicating the ideas you're interested in that you've shared with us?
Yeah, that's a question I think about a lot, because, you know, I didn't get into rap thinking I would be a science communicator. I got into rap because I just loved it, and my passion was for the art form and the wordplay, and then I, at a certain point, realized that it could be a powerful channel for science communication, which probably makes me more effective as a science communicating rapper, because if I tried to learn rap because I thought it would be a good way to get down with the kids, I probably wouldn't be as good at it. But my hypothesis retroactively is that rap was forged in a very competitive environment, right? It comes from these sort of block parties where the DJ is putting on a dance set, and the crowd is dancing all night, and the DJ is mixing break beats back and forth, and there's a mic, but there's only one mic, and the DJ controls whether the mic is turned off or turned on, and they got friends that are like, yo, let me get on the mic. And if you get on the mic and don't uplift the crowd and hype them up, the DJ will just turn off your mic. Or someone else will be like, yo, that's whack, let me get on the mic. So there's a kind of like survival of the fittest crucible that produced the earliest hip hop. And you hear it in a lot of the rap lyrics that's like battling, dissing other rappers and saying who's got the best skill and who's boring and who's interesting. And, you know, I think that origin of rap caused it to culturally innovate all of the key crowd pleasing mechanisms. So like call and response, you know, metaphor, punchlines, wordplay, humor, storytelling, like you got to move the crowd. And there's nothing else that matters but whether you move the crowd, and how you move the crowd is incidental to whether you move the crowd. And if you don't move the crowd, your mic gets turned off and someone else gets to try to move the crowd. And it's like the perfect sort of wedge of Darwinian competition that will produce hyper entertaining outcomes. And because it went through that crucible, and then, you know, once it was in the entertainment industry and the sort of capitalist competition for listeners and record sales, then that just amplified it. But I think, you know, that's been part of hip hop culture since day one. And I think that's why I glommed onto it so much as a young person, like, oh, this is so entertaining, like the stories and the lyricism, and you know, also just the glamour and glitz and the like showing off high status lifestyles of luxury and all that, like talk about triggering our sort of cave brain impulses, right? So yeah, I think rap kind of like all of the triggers are there for pushing our natural buttons of what we want from entertainment live from a performer, and you just put the science communication into that channel, and it's the channel that works. You know, so that's, but I kind of started rapping just because I loved it. And then once I got into science, had to start sort of reconstructing, like reverse engineering, like what was it that made me love this and why does it work? And, you know, sort of applying the scientific theories to the practice of an art form that you get into in the first place, just because you feel like instinctually drawn to it. And instinctively drawn to something is not a scientific explanation, right? It like demands a scientific explanation.
Well, since we're sharing favorites, I have to say one of my favorites is your rap battle between data scientist and statistician in data science. It was definitely a lot of fun.
I mean, it's natural to the art form to have a dialogue where two people go head to head, right? That's like, you know, epic rap battles of history has done that all very effectively on YouTube, but also, you know, there's like Grind Time and King of the Dot and all these battle leagues. And, you know, you expect rappers to sort of go at each other, but you can apply that format to scientific controversies as well.
Well, it's about 7:45 here, a little later, 3 hours later where you are in New York. We're going to open the phone lines now for listeners to call with your questions for our guest, Baba Brinkman, relating to tonight's topic. We'll just continue our three-way conversation here.
Well, Bob, it sounds like we may actually have a caller already.
Okay.
The phone lines are blowing up.
Good evening. Thanks for this very enlightening program. For many would say that the topics you're speaking to are not art forms, either science nor hip-hop. And this has been delightful. I looked forward to hearing this since I heard it being announced. My question is simple. Could you speak to your feelings about the lending hand of the Wu-Tang Clan? And I'll take my answer up there. Shalom, peace be with you. Everything's groovy.
Thanks, caller.
Thank you. And, you know, one of the sort of scientific influences on my rap flow has definitely been the GZA genius from Wu-Tang. And he's also done some collaboration with astrophysicists and Neil deGrasse Tyson and people at MIT, and he's worked on some sort of like cosmology based raps. So, you know, in terms of bringing intelligence and thoughtfulness and also like Shakespearean level lyricism and vocabulary. Wu-Tang Clan, I mean, amazing quality level across the board in terms of all of the members, you know, Method Man for flow, RZA for the sort of like, intricacy of his rhythm patterns and thoughtfulness in terms of reaching out to different concepts. And, you know, definitely one of the raps that I'm working on right now is going to be about the COVID spread. And one of the lines in there is like, you know, when the floodgates open up, then you have to shut it. And the Wuhan plan ain't nothing to fuss with. in terms of how they shut down the pandemic early on. But Wu-Tang's definitely been a big influence on me.
Well, you've got a lot of material for any kind of a new rap that you come out with relating to this this pandemic. I mean, because we've entered a lot of new words into our jargon. Flatten the curve, social distancing, lockdown, index patient. There's a lot. Folks are really picking up and trying to understand what all that means, and it's been a learning experience for us.
Well, stay tuned. I got a rap coming. It's going to name check most of that stuff.
That's great. In fact, you know, I think, yeah, I've been thinking about this crisis and what kind of changes it's going to precipitate in our behavior and the way we think about things. It's almost kind of like the germs are testing our weak points in our systems. I mean, we've learned that we need to reexamine a lot of things, including stored reserves of our medical supplies and stabilizing the raw materials that are essential for manufacturing goods. And the public is getting up to speed on technology to do their jobs remotely. So it's kind of pointing out the weak points in a lot of our systems. And it's actually, I think, precipitated kind of a reexamination of our moral decision making, too, with the issues coming up like panic hoarding or protecting ourselves versus things that we need to do that may either harm or benefit the collective. The mask wearing issue is kind of interesting. Any thoughts on any of that?
Well, I feel like one of the quotations that was running through my head today was when Ronald Reagan was running for president, he said, "The most terrifying words I can imagine are someone coming to me and saying, 'I'm from the government and I'm here to help.'" It's like, that's all people want to hear right now. You know, there's like nothing else that can help but government at various levels. And the people whose entire ideology has been about let's degrade the social net and shrink the government and take away as much as we can from the collective commons and resources and stockpiles and defund it all. I mean, what a repudiation this is of that mentality. So I hope that's the case, that people rethink, you know, the value of having a robust system and safety net and resources and, you know, paid sick leave and just really basic, obvious stuff. Like the argument for paid sick leave works all the time. But it's only during a pandemic that it's sort of obvious why it works all the time. Like people shouldn't be going to work with the flu when there's not a pandemic, but they have to. Right. And so now it's more life and death than it always is, but it's always kind of life and death for some people, given the, you know, the influenza casualty rates normally. So it's just, I agree that this is the crucible of that argument. And as for masks, yeah, I follow a lot of people that have been posting stuff on Twitter for, you know, a couple weeks saying what is wrong with the sort of mask denialism that's out there. There's good research that says the probability of it passing from person to person is diminished by 80%, even with a cloth mask that you made from a t-shirt. So what's the downside of asking people to wear those in public? You know, from a scientific perspective, I think it's hard to argue with that. I think that one of the main obstacles is cultural. I think Western cultures, North America, Europe, I think there's a squeamishness around sort of not being able to tell who people are. And I feel it. I haven't been out in public with a mask. I haven't been out in public, period, for weeks at this point, but I have internalized the argument that it makes sense from a public health perspective for everybody to wear masks when they go out in public. It sounds like that's about to become a mandate or government guidance for the entire country, and it's going to be interesting to see how people deal with that because culturally we have an aversion to it.
My observation was that the downside started by the fear that people would go out and start hoarding and buying up the supply of masks that was needed in the front line, you know, the people on the front lines here, the doctors and nurses and EMTs and those folks, and that by wearing masks, then other people would start mimicking that behavior and that there would be a shortage. But now that the homemade masks have come into the picture, that kind of takes that away. Do you have some thoughts on that, Julie? You're pretty well connected to the medical establishment.
Oh gosh, masks. Yeah. I do think it's definitely the supply issue has definitely been tricky. And I think, there's, you know, a sense of, trying not to panic, you know, making sure that, you know, the folks who really are in most need of the masks are the ones who get them first, and kind of seeing, you know, the bigger picture that way. Not sure where I was going with that. I've been talking about a lot of masks lately.
Well, I think people have a natural tendency to compete and want to sort of Cadillac whatever they're doing. You know, so for me, the revelation that you could make a mask out of a t-shirt in your closet and it would help to stop the spread, that negates the problem of taking any masks away from any health professionals.
Right.
But once everybody's wearing a mask in public, you know, who's going to want to wear a t-shirt mask when they could get an N95 on the black market or something, right? So, you know, the challenge is going to be to stop the thing that people will naturally want to do, which is upgrade their mask to a medical grade one, when the ideal would be to have all civilians wearing homemade ones that don't tax the medical system at all. And once again, you've got this challenge of how do you prevent free riding, right? Like in a lot of these, it's the same with climate change, like the individual interests are contrary to the collective interest. It's in everyone's individual interest to shirk, pollution restrictions and catch a free ride. And it's in our collective interest to do what's going to be better for everybody so we don't end up in a race to the bottom. It's a sort of similar situation with masks, which is where norms come in, right? Cultural norms around what's shamed and what's celebrated. I think that's already playing a powerful role in this pandemic where, like, you know, that woman who's in Red Robin bragging about how she's having a burger because that's what Americans do, and then she trends on Twitter all day because everybody's like, look at this idiot going to a restaurant when there's a pandemic. You know, so I think, like, we can trust public shaming to play a positive role to a certain degree. Of course, that can also go out of control and turn into cancel culture and dogpiling. So, I mean, it's tricky.
Yeah,
and it's all
moving
way
point.
Faster than anybody has any ability to control or guide at this point, right?
Yeah,
I think that's a really good point. And coming back to masks, I'm sorry, I was going to make one other anecdotal comment there. In discussion with masks, as the discussion's been evolving with folks around me, something at least I've noticed is this sort of black and white thinking. This mask protects you from the virus. This one doesn't. And I think we can all kind of look at reality and know that it's more nuanced than that, and that it's not simply a matter of preventing the virus altogether, but like you said, significantly reducing the probability or even drastically reducing the viral load anyone may become exposed to.
Well, three cheers for nuance. Baba, one of your specialties is freestyle rap. Can you throw one of those on us in the last few minutes of the show?
Sure. Okay, so why don't you give me some phrases that I can work into my freestyle, and I'll throw
definitely
a beat here
busy
on my studio, and we'll rock it out.
Well, let's say critical thinking.
I said Bayesian.
Bayesian, yeah. Index patient, flatten the curve, social distancing. You got to get social distancing in there.
Flatten the curve, social distancing. All right, I got this. I can only hold about three or four things in my short-term memory, so I'm actually taking a quick note on these,
cool.
But I will work them in. All right, let's see. Hook up this beat. How's that coming through? Can you guys hear that?
Could be a little louder.
Okay, let me turn that up. Yeah. Check it out. It's Baba Brinkman. And I'm straight up freestyling, I'm coming to you live right now from Long Island, Baba Brinkman. Yeah, I'm just bringing a lot of knowledge when I'm speaking. Critical thinking about what to bring next in the lyrics. Hopefully you all tune into scientists when you hear it. That's the way that it works. That's the impact my freestyle did. I will get up inside your brain and infect it like a virus. Come on, that's the way that I got the rhymes. I'm blazing them. I'm saying don't use your hunches. Think like a Bayesian. Yeah, that's the way that I freestyle and blaze. You can tell that I'm down with this man, the Reverend Bayes. Reverend Bayes, that's the way that I blaze it, place that I take it. I'm the first one to start this, the index patient that mixes up hip-hop and science in a brew. This is the level, the pinnacle peak that I'm taking it to. Yes, indeed, I used to chill in Canada snowboarding, but now I'm at home and I am never panic hoarding. Yeah, this is me spitting it lyrically with the raps, but you will look in my closet and not find a lot of masks N95. This is how I'm kicking the rhymes right now on K-Mud, thinking clearly and it's live. This is how I kick it. This is just how I feel it with Julia Minton and my man Bob Freelich. And how it goes, I don't know. I just use the words. My rapping's absurd. Come on, people, flatten the curve. I'm spitting lyrics infinitely off the top of the dome. So take my advice in this rhyme and stay home.
Oh, great. All right. I know people are applauding that. That's great. Well, I want to thank you very much, Baba. And we'll put links to your work and a number of the music videos and songs and things that we've talked about. You've been a great guest. It's lightened our mood greatly. Can you share some, other than the contact information that I've given, any other contact information for our listeners?
I'm at Baba Brinkman on Instagram and Twitter, and that's my website. So anyone across the web will find me there. And also, you can Google Rap Guide. There's rap guides to various topics that I've released. And actually, I'll put a call out right now. One of the things that I'm doing in my quarantine is developing an education website where a teacher that's teaching remotely can assign their students to research scientific annotations to rap music videos, starting with mine, but then reaching out to other rappers that do informative videos as well. So if any teachers want to be a beta tester with their classes of my new platform, it's a couple weeks from being ready to share, and I would love to have them reach out to me and say, I want to use it, because I got music videos about evolution, climate change, skepticism, lots of topics, and I would love to see some student annotations tacked on them.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Bob. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I want to thank our engineer, Dara Lee. She's done a great job, kept this show on the road. And as always, I'd love to thank Julia. And until next time, keep thinking.
Clearly.
Good night.
Good night, Bob. Good night, Dara Lee. Good night, K-Mud Land.
Because they know a guy who's got a friend, who's got a brother, who read a book by this other guy who says that, hey, this stuff always works for me. That's why I say, think for yourself, little folks.